I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mama's of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day. It's always a good day around here aboard the mothership. We laugh, we learn, we have a good time. Why do anything else in the morning? Why allow your sports radio to be combative, argumentative, finger-pointing, and negative in the morning? Let us be your light-hearted morning. Every single morning, weekdays here on CBS Sports Radio, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. As always, on a Monday morning, we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Coming up this hour here on the DA Show, we are stunned to a news in 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, how about that Colts win? Come back from 14 points down against the Packers. Huge victory for Indy yesterday. Also, I want to talk about Joe Burrow's injury coming up here in a few minutes. But first, the NFC East. It is so reprehensible what is happening right now in the NFC East. It is so disgusting what is happening right now. The Philadelphia Eagles, who actually have their quarterback healthy, lose again in embarrassing fashion to fall to 3-6-1. And yet they lead the division. When you see that graphic on your TV screen during games, after games, NFL Network, CBS, what have you, and you see the playoff picture and it has the Eagles in there at 3-6-1 because they lead the most grotesque division arguably in NFL history, it's sad. It's real sad. They're 3-6-1, and they lead the division. But here's the wrap. All four teams have three wins right now. All four. You've got a 3-6-1 Eagles team, and then 3-3-7s. Mraz, I know you are cut from the same cloth as the listeners, the viewers, and the fans that like to do win, loss, win, win, loss, loss, as we go down the schedule. And so are you ready? I'm about to give you, in the crystal ball, exactly what's going to happen the rest of the way in the NFC East. Are you ready, Mraz?
Not only am I ready, DA, this is exactly what my 9 p.m. Eastern hour was like last night. So I am more than ready to hear your take on win, loss, win, loss.
With bacon! Cue the music. Okay, so it's going to start off on Thanksgiving with Cowboys against Washington. I'm going to give you what I think is going to happen the rest of the way with all of these teams, okay?
Okay.
Washington-Dallas coming up on Thursday. I'm giving the win to the Cowboys because they were at home. Maybe found a little something yesterday as Andy Dalton led them to a victory. I'll give the Cowboys the win there, okay? You all right with that?
Yeah. I think Washington's winning, but it's a coin flip, so I'll give it to you.
Here is the rest of what I see happening with Washington. I think they lose Thursday on Thanksgiving. I think they then lose the next three as well. They're at Pittsburgh, at San Francisco, home to Seattle. Okay, the Niners are banged up and brutal, but I don't know if I trust Washington going to the West Coast and winning. So those are my three losses. I think they also lose Week 17 at Philly. I think the only win in there for Washington is home to Carolina Week 16. And even that,
right,
I'm dubious about. But I think that they'll find one win in the final 5 weeks of the season. I put them at 4-12, finishing last place in the NFC East, okay?
Goodbye, Washington.
Next, I'm looking at the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles, they have to play the Seahawks coming up at home. Then they're at Green Bay. Then they're home to New Orleans. Then they're at Arizona. They're going to go 0-4. The Eagles are going to go 0-4. Home to the Seahawks, at Green Bay,
yeah.
home to the Saints, at Arizona. They're losing all of those games.
I mean, how is that offensive line blocking any of that? What is Carson Wentz doing versus any of those teams?
Wentz against Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, if Drew Brees is back, but even if not, and then Kyler Murray. So the Eagles are going 0-4 the next 4 weeks. They wrap up, though, with at Dallas, home to Washington. They need to win those two games at the end of the season to have a shot of the division, which I joked about on Twitter yesterday, going 5-10-1 and winning the NFC East. I think the Eagles actually lose at Dallas Week 16 and then beat Washington Week 17. I think the Eagles go 1-5 the rest of the way, which would put them at 4-11-1. Okay? That brings us to the Giants. The Giants are at Cincinnati this weekend, which I would have said could have been a loss before they lost Joe Burrow. Now knowing no Burrow in there or Ryan Finley, forget it. Giants win that game. The Giants then have to go to Seattle, home to Arizona, home to Cleveland, at Baltimore. A ruthless stretch where they're going to go 0-4. The Giants at Seattle, home to Arizona, home to Cleveland, at Baltimore. All four playoff caliber teams. They then wrap up with Dallas Week 17 at home at the Meadowlands. I think the Giants win that game. I think they go 2-4 the rest of the way to finish at 5-11. Which means the Cowboys only have to find 5 wins here to win the division potentially, if they can get the tiebreaker. If they find 3 wins, they're going to win this division. They only got to get to 6-10. And I think the Cowboys get to either 6-10 or 7-9 because listen to the schedule. Home to Washington on Thanksgiving. At Baltimore, loss. At Cincinnati, though, now a win. Who's ever going to play the Bengals? They got to win that game right now that Joe Burrow's out. They're home to the Niners. They don't have to go across country. Home to the Niners. Niners are completely banged up. Home to Philly. The Eagles are a mess right now, and they get them in Dallas, and then they're at the Giants. As much as I don't like the Cowboys, as much as they're an inherently flawed team, we see CeeDee Lamb make this incredible acrobatic grab. They still have Ezekiel Elliott. They still have these wide receiving options. The Cowboys, I think, can actually win 4 of their final 6. I think they can beat Washington, Cincinnati, San Francisco, and Philly. Even if they split the Washington-Philly game, the Washington-Philly games, it still gives them 3 wins. They're going to be 6-10 or 7-9 and win this GD division. Mraz, I'm telling you this right now. The Cowboys are going to win this division at 6-10 or 7-9. Book it.
I don't want to sound like a homer. They're not. The Giants are winning this division, D.A.
Okay, find me the wins for the Giants.
I will tell you right now. You're overestimating one thing here. The Cowboys were awful before this Dalton injury. They're still awful. They lost to a Kirk Cousins-led Viking team that proved to be fraud yesterday. The difference is the Giants are going to find a way to beat the Cleveland Browns, and they will win one of the Cardinals-Seahawks-Ravens. Probably not the Cardinal game.
What gives you the confidence that they're going to beat the Seahawks in Seattle, the Cardinals at home, or the Ravens.
The Giants are the only team in that NFC East that's competed with the big boys in the NFL this year and lost these tight games, and now they're finally turning a corner and getting better. There's one thing you could bank on when all those teams play the Seahawks and Ravens. The one team that's not going to get blown out in that division is going to be the Giants. A bounce of the ball is going to go their way in one of those games. Right now, who knows what the Ravens even look like in Week 16 if the season falls off the rails, too. They're reeling.
Well, the Giants, even if they find one of those wins in there, they're going to be no better than 6-10.
I agree.
That's their ceiling at 6-10, so they would have to win the division at 6-10.
My belief is Week 17, Giants-Cowboys, is your Sunday night game for the division title. Winner at 6-10 takes the division. That is what I believe will happen, and I think the Giants at home will get it done.
So it's going to be 2-5-9 teams,
yes,
in Week 17.
Yep. Whatever it is. Yeah, 5-10 teams. Yeah, 2-5-10 teams, Week 17 at the Meadowlands on Sunday Night Football for the NFC East title, Giants and Cowboys. That is my belief. And I think the Giants will win that game.
The Cowboys have more winnable games here. The Cowboys have a more winnable final six games.
But they got to prove they could do that. The Cowboys haven't competed in a lot of these games where the Giants have.
Well, wouldn't you say you give them at Cincinnati?
You have to because Burrow's out. Absolutely. The Niner game, though, that's not going to be easy for them.
I don't think the Cowboys can beat the Niners at home. I mean, look at the Niners right now.
They absolutely can. But the Niner defense against Andy Dalton still, that's going to be difficult.
And then they get the Eagles at home.
Here's really what it comes down to. If you really want to believe that the Cowboys are not going to win the division, the Giants will, Washington wins on Thanksgiving. If Washington wins on Thanksgiving based on Washington's schedule, I think the Giants could waltz to the NFC East by Week 17.
Waltz at 6-10.
They could waltz right in at 6-10. I'm really not trying to be a homer. That is the team playing the best of those four teams, and they didn't play yesterday, so it's what have you done for me lately?
Well, no, I think the Giants have been incredibly impressive in lack of talent and still being competitive. I've given Joe Judge a ton of credit. I just don't see them winning at Seattle, home to the Cardinals, or at Baltimore. I just don't think they win any one of those three games. If you want to give me a coin flip on the Browns at home, maybe, because, I mean, let's face it, the Browns are winning ugly right now. But I don't think there's any way the Giants are anything better than 3-3. Which would put them at 6-10, as you said.
Will you at least admit that in those games, based on what we've seen this year versus all these great teams like the Rams and Bucks, the Giants are going to be in those games. Like, those are not going to be games where they get bullied and pushed over. And I got to think, unlike the first half of the year, a break is going to go their way in one of these games if they're in these games and have played their ass off to make sure they're one-possession games. Every playoff team the Giants have played has been a one-possession game. They suck!
I don't know. All I know is this. The Eagles are going to lose their next four games.
Oh, they are. The Eagles are dead.
Which doesn't mean they're dead in the division because they have Dallas and Washington week 16 and week 17. You have to win both of those games, and then you are 5-10-1, and that tie might be the difference if everybody else is 5-11, which is insane.
Right.
But they're going to lose their next four, and then they've got Dallas and Washington. Their best-case scenario right now is 5-10-1, which is a sin.
Right.
The fact that the Eagles are going to be 5-10-1 at best is a sin.
That's a terrible job by Peterson, Wentz, and company. And the thing about winning those two games for the NFC East, and I know they're bad, if the Eagles lose all these games in a row, are they suddenly going to get back up in Week 16 and 17 to beat Dallas and Washington, or have they checked their bags and ready to bow out?
Maybe so. The NFC East comes down to basically three games. It comes down to this Thanksgiving, Washington against the Cowboys. It comes down to Week 17, Cowboys-Eagles. And it comes down to the Week 17,
Giants-Cowboys. Yeah, right.
No, Week 16 is Eagles-Cowboys.
Yeah.
So those are the three games. They will decide the division. And somebody is going to go to the playoffs, maybe 7-9. Likely 6-10 or 5-11 or 5-10-1. And that and the fact that they will host a playoff game is so remarkably stupid.
It is.
It's dumb that they should even have an automatic bid by winning the division, but if you want to do that, fine. There is no way 5-10-1 or 5-11 or 6-10 should be able to host a playoff game.
It is a total joke. But we take it, we get it. And if that stupid Evan Engram had caught that pass on that Thursday night versus the Eagles, The Giants are 4-6 right now and waving goodbye to everybody else as they run away.
Waving goodbye. Goodbye, Toulouse, 4-6.
And the Eagles would basically be on like a 10-game losing streak before week 16 to 17. It's unbelievable.
It's electric.
All right, that's your NFC East breakdown. The Joe Burrow injury yesterday makes everybody sick to their stomach, which says something about Joe Burrow. The Bengals stink. They are going to be, once again, a bottom five team, a top five pick in the NFL draft. The Bengals have been an afterthought and a punchline for many, many years. And the fact that Joe Burrow goes down with that knee injury yesterday and the entire NFL world gives him salutes on Twitter and has this outpouring of sympathy and everybody is heartbroken goes to show you the type of player Joe Burrow is. Burrow does everything right. He does everything. Everything right. Burrow's attitude is positive. Burrow's leadership is obvious. Burrow's talent is wonderful. Burrow makes no excuses for losing these games. He's not blaming his coach or blaming his wide receivers or blaming his offensive line or blaming his team. He's just out there competing. And it makes you sick that that hit ends up ending his season. Sounds like it's a torn ACL. He has already tweeted, see you next year. You won't be able to get rid of me that easily, which is just, again, perfectly the perfect tone as well that I'm here. You can't get rid of me like that. Gives a little levity. Perfect tweet. My concern is that this takes him out of the beginning of next year because if, of course, that injury to that leg, what we saw yesterday, you're just like, of course, he's not going to play the rest of the season. Their season's over. There's only a month and a half left to play. Get him out of there. Fine. But it happens around Thanksgiving. And if the ACL tear takes a full year, does this take him out of the first half of next season, which would be brutal? If he misses the final six games of this year, no big deal. But now he's rehabbing a significant injury all year, spring, summer, beginning of fall. Let's see. Early diagnosis is there might be more damage than just the ACL, but who knows about a timeline there. Everything about that, though, is sickening. Defenders going low on him, hitting his knee, it buckling, writhing in pain, getting carted off, torn ACL, ending his season. Every part of that is brutal and miserable. And I just think it says a lot about him as a young man that immediately everybody kind of felt this pit in their stomach because I think through his run last year at LSU, people really grew to feel like they knew him. I was thinking if Justin Herbert tore his ACL, people would be like, oh man, that's a real bummer. But I don't think there would be this innate connection that a lot of people seem to have with Joe Burrow. And some of that I think had to do with last year he had just such an unbelievable season that he was in our living rooms every single week. Then he gives that really heartfelt, honest Heisman Trophy speech. Of course, he wins the Heisman. But he talks about poverty and illiteracy in his hometown and home region of Southeast Ohio. We see him get drafted by a bad Bengals team and immediately take over the reins and be a leader from day one. And he just makes no excuses. He is competing with that Bengals team. And he's just doing everything that you want to see from a rookie number one draft pick. And for him to go down, it really was crushing yesterday. It really, really was crushing. And the hope here is just that Burrow does not lose a chunk of next season with this. Thankfully, health, wellness, science, surgery is so much better than it ever was. So he should be able to recover at some point in time. But I have to say, watching him writhe on the field, I'm thinking back to Carson Palmer in the playoff game 05, Kimo von Allhoffen, and that hit, which disrupts his entire career and trajectory with the Bengals. And for really old-school football fans, Greg Cook, who was their first-round draft pick back in 1969 or 70, I believe, and he had this unbelievable rookie season, and he ends up getting injured, his knee gets torn up in the early 70s, and he's never the same. And they felt as though he was Terry Bradshaw with the Bengals, and he just never developed into anything because of injuries. And back then, they couldn't fix your ACL. I mean, that was basically a death sentence for your career. But I'm just thinking about another charmed young franchise QB for the Bengals that deals with a knee injury early in his career, and it just taking the breath out of you, sucking all of the oxygen out of the franchise. Hope for the best for Joe Burrow, man. That dude's a stud. When we come back on the show, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
I was born in the dark, raised in it, gravitated in it.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Here I am, world. I am Bay. Yeehaw. Thursday, it's a special Thanksgiving Day edition of the NFL on CBS. As Deshaun Watson of the Texans take on the Lions, coverage begins at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific with the NFL Today. On Sunday, NFL on CBS doubleheader features a marquee matchup between Mahomes and Tom Brady's Bucks. It's a full weekend of football with the NFL only on CBS. CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah! So, Mraz, it's the NBC crew. It's Michaels and Collinsworth that get Steelers and Ravens on Thursday night?
Yes, although I could be Tirico, unless Tirico maybe is doing Sunday night football. I believe there's a trade-off with one of them doing Sunday night, one of them doing Thanksgiving.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's the NBC. NBC is going to get Steelers-Ravens Thursday night.
Yes.
And I love NBC's production value. I just think they have the least corny graphics. I mean, boy, have you seen some of these Monday night football graphics ESPN has whipped up? Like cartoon players and cartoon backgrounds and just total silliness. And I get the graphics are much better these days and graphics packages allow you to on the fly create cool stuff. And look, I get, you know, trying to doll up your broadcast with new technology, but are some of those graphics just the worst? And then I watch NBC and they're like, you know, down the middle, trying to just give you a smart broadcast, not trying to dumb things up all night long like some of these broadcasts are. So I'm happy that NBC's got that game. So Fox has Washington Dallas, which is a woof game, except for the fact that the division's still up for grabs and it actually is going to
matter,
right? And then CBS, we get Texans and Lions. Oh God. Is Nance and Romo going to do this game?
Yeah, we got Nance, Romo, Watson, Stafford, Patricia, Cornell. It's a whole thing.
Oh, God.
So at the very least, the Texans looked like a competent outfit yesterday in beating the Patriots, and Deshaun Watson was phenomenal because if the Patriots had beaten the Texans and Houston looked gross like they have so much of the season, would there be any juice? I mean, you'd want to throw turkey bones at the TV screen to be forced to endure 3 hours of Texans Lions, Patricia versus Cornell coming up on Thursday.
This is a tough sell. And look, we're all going to be into it because it's Thanksgiving football. And that's basically the sell, right? It's a game on Thanksgiving. I think there's even like college basketball on at the same time. You might get like a Kansas Gonzaga game or something on Thursday afternoon. But it is, at least usually you have one team that's in the playoff hunt in these kind of games where it's like, all right, you know, we're watching for that team. There's nothing to watch unless it's your fantasy team or you're laying a couple pennies on an over-under. It's ridiculous.
And I've always said this. I love tradition. I love NFL tradition. I think that both the Lions and the Cowboys having home games on Thanksgiving is idiotic. I know it goes back a long time. I know it's tradition. I know that Lions fans and Cowboys fans do something that many of us would not do, which is punt on their Thanksgiving to go sit in a parking lot or go sit in a barn to go watch these teams play. So God bless. I'm glad you guys go out and watch games in person. Not this year, but normal years. But the Lions should play the Cowboys every year. And they should obviously rotate who gets the game. Because it's a crying shame that America has to endure Lions football every single Thanksgiving. It is a crying shame. If Thanksgiving was played in mid-September, I might be able to deal with it. But I'm going on 35 years of watching Lions on Thanksgiving, and 90% of the time, the game means nothing for the Lions. 90% of Thanksgivings over the last 40 years is the Lions are already out of it, and it means nothing. Why we are forced to endure this every single year is so silly. Again, you want to play, if the Lions want to play on Thanksgiving every single year, God bless. They should not hold us hostage every year with a home game when the Cowboys also hold us hostage with a home game. Play one another and then give us two real games. Steelers-Ravens is a good one. Give me the second best game or the third best game or the fourth best game of the weekend. Plop it into that 4 o'clock window on Thanksgiving and make Lions and Cowboys the early game every single year. Because Mraz, I'm sick and tired of this. Sick and tired of every year having to basically meander and half ignore the Lions game and then kind of be into the Cowboys game and then finally get to a good game at 7 o'clock at night. We should not be forced to do this as Americans.
They suck! It's a tradition like no other, getting in your car at the end of the second quarter going, why did I wake up and care about this game and rush around to watch the Lions play? There's, at least even if they were bad in the early 90s, I know they had a couple playoff years, at least you could watch Barry Sanders run around. There's not even a desirable player to watch on the
nothing.
Lions.
It's nothing.
I guess you could watch Matt Patricia make you feel less bad about yourself with how fat you're going to get on Thanksgiving when you watch him on the sideline. To me, I guess that's the positive.
Let me give you the other game that would be a billion times better than Texans and Lions. And granted, if the Texans were actually good and Deshaun Watson, right, that's a reason to watch. But you're watching them against a team that's always out of it by November. We could get Chargers-Bills. That's tasty. Could have Titans-Colts. That's phenomenal. Could have even Cardinals-Patriots. And while the Patriots are done, obviously, Kyler Murray versus Cam Newton, there's some juice there. You've got even, of course, Chiefs and Buccaneers are phenomenal, but Niners-Rams, Saints-Broncos. I mean, the Broncos showed life yesterday. Give me anything but watching the Lions again. Anything but Romeo Crennel versus Matt Patricia. Anything.
Even as you're saying that, it's just like picturing the Cardinals playing whoever on Thanksgiving afternoon. I guess I'm just a traditionalist. I need the Lions there at 12:30. Even as you said that, I kind of cringed a little bit, even though I agree with what you're saying. It feels like we just have to keep doing it because that's what we know. It'd be like the Yankees not wearing pinstripes.
Lions versus Cowboys. That's the solution. You might say, well, yeah, you can't always align the Lions and Cowboys because they play outside of their own divisions. And so you never know with records, yada, yada, yada. Look, you can make an exception, okay? The Lions and Cowboys should play every single year on Thanksgiving, and that should be it, and they should rotate who plays that game where. Boom. That eliminates the Lions and the Cowboys in one fell swoop, and then we get two real games. Standing by with our headline this morning is a kind sir, Mr. Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
Good morning again, guys. These headlines are sponsored by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. The Las Vegas Raiders were so close to sweeping the Chiefs.
Carr up underneath center on this third down play. And Carr keeps it. Looking for a receiver off play action. Can't find anybody open. Got to throw it. And off to this touchdown. Jackpot, baby. Vegas touchdown.
Brent Musburger on Raiders Radio. Go-ahead one-yard toss to Jason Witten with 1:43 left on Sunday Night Football, but that was plenty of time for Patrick Mahomes to march back down the field.
By the way, is Musburger now using jackpot because they're in Vegas?
I mean, that's the first I've heard of it. I don't know how many Raiders highlights we've played during the show on a Monday morning this season, but that's the first time I've heard him go to jackpot.
I could see Musburger loving gambling, loving being in Vegas, and then using that jackpot as his signature touchdown call. Yeah.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
I don't hate it. The problem is it just sounds like he's calling a rec basketball game with no fans. I think if you give a good jackpot and you have a loud Vegas crowd roaring, I think you'd like it a little more.
Okay, we'll see.
Oh, okay. So the Chiefs answered that with a 22-yard score to Travis Kelce. A Daniel Sorensen pick then sealed a 35-31 KC win in Vegas. The Chiefs now have a 3-game lead on those Raiders in the West. The Cowboys won a back-and-forth affair in Minnesota, 31-28. You've already heard Dalton Schwartz's 2-yard TD catch with 97 seconds left. The Colts rallied for a 34-31 OT win over the Packers, and Derrick Henry's 29-yard run gave the Titans a 30-24 OT win in Baltimore. After three straight wins to start the Tua Tagovailoa era, the Dolphins managed just 105 yards, with Tua sacked 6 times through 3 quarters in Denver yesterday, so Tua a bench for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
When I was in, we couldn't really get things going. And, you know, coach felt like it was the best decision to put Fitz in to try to give us a spark. So when I heard that, I mean, it's really what's best for the team.
Fitzpatrick did get them a little bit closer, but they still lost to the Broncos 20-13. Brian Flores said postgame Tua remains his starter.
Ending on an interception, right? That was a Fitzpatrick interception.
Correct.
That ended the game. Totally yes. On brand that Fitzpatrick comes into the fourth quarter, leads them to the field goal that they need to get to within 7, and then has one chance to tie, one final chance, and throws the interception, backbreaker of the end zone. It was like, boom, chef's kiss. Mwah! Perfect, Fitzpatrick, perfect.
The Steelers 27, the Jaguars 3. Pittsburgh's now 10-0. 10 of the previous 17 teams to get there have made the Super Bowl. Taysom Hill scored twice on the ground as the Saints topped the Falcons 24-9. Carolina blanked Detroit 20-0. Those Lions shut out for the first time since 2009. Tonight, the Rams host the Bucks at 8:15 Eastern. The LA Lakers reportedly signing Marcus Gasol to a 2-year deal worth the vet's minimum, and Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell signing 5-year designated rookie extensions. They start at $163 million but can reach $195. If either makes an All-NBA team, each guy has an opt-out, after year 4. Alabama, a unanimous number 1 in the new AP College Football Poll, the top 8 unchanged for the second week in a row. Number 11, Northwestern, has its highest ranking in 24 years. Baylor men's basketball still intends to play this week at Mohegan Sun, despite head coach Scott Drew testing positive for COVID-19. No one else has tested positive either yesterday or back on Friday. Their next test is tomorrow once they arrive in Connecticut. Arizona State, though, reportedly withdrawing from this event because they don't want to play the Bears. Maybe, though, they'll rearrange the schedule instead. Florida has already pulled out of this event because of positive tests and contact tracing within the Gator program. And 2 trips to penalty kicks in the MLS playoffs last night. FC Dallas outlasted Portland 8-7 for an upset in those PKs. That came after Sporting KC goalie Tim Melia saved the first 3 attempts he faced from San Jose to get that win. And now, boys, for the first time this week, we're stunned.
Woohoo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So a relatively small sinkhole opened up last week on a Toronto street. That's not really stunning. The color of the liquid in the sinkhole is the problem here. It was neon green, like ecto-cooler green, something completely unnatural that should not be under our streets. Maybe they needed the actual Ghostbusters to fix this. As you might expect, since it's 2020, conspiracy theories abound about what this green stuff was. Unfortunately, the neon green water, totally harmless. The color is from a
unfortunately.
Dye.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that local authorities use to trace where the water came from so they know what's causing the sinkhole so they can repair it. Nothing ghostly, nothing poison, nothing dastardly. It's just neon green dye to fix the problem.
I haven't seen Ghostbusters 2 in a long time, but isn't this the central point of Ghostbusters 2, that there is a green ooze? Oh, no, it's a pink ooze that is coursing through the subways of New York City in sinkholes.
Correct.
Okay, but that was a pink one. It wasn't green, right?
And it was definitely more viscous than this. This was just green water. That was actual ooze slash slime in Ghostbusters.
And the pink ooze slash slime, which is underground in New York City, is like the representation of anger from New Yorkers. Is that, do I remember the plot of New York of Ghostbusters 2? Is that that?
Well, DA, that's the second to last movie you've seen, so you should know this way better than me and Bogish.
It's true. It's true.
Pete would know this, by the way.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
So there was a story like this a couple of months ago during the summer where, did you see in Michigan, I think outside of Detroit, there was green goo that was pouring out of a pipe on the side of the road. And they had to have a road blockade set up, and people are like, why underground here in Michigan is there green slime and ooze coming out of our water system? Is this a problem? Authorities were like, no big deal, this is just normal. And people are like, I don't think this is normal. And they tested it, and they're like, yeah, this is definitely not normal. There's high levels of toxic things, sludge, chemicals, what have you, that are poisoning the water system. No, it's fine. It's fine. Your water's supposed to look green and glowing. That's actually an additive to it. Which also in Canada, they're usually good about that type of stuff. So surprising that there was green goo. If this was New York City, then I would definitely buy that.
Canada's good at not having neon green in their water, basically.
They're good at
that stuff.
They're usually responsible. Usually accountable. Unlike us here in the States. All right, thank you, Bogues. On the phones, 855-212-4CBS. Nick is in Amarillo, Texas, here on CBS Sports Radio. Nick, good morning.
Hey, buddy. How y'all doing this morning?
Good. How you doing?
I just got to say, you know what? The Cowboys make ratings go up. When they're on them Super Bowl bandwagons in the 90s, they were everybody wanted them on Thanksgiving. And the only other person that brings up the ratings is Patrick Mahomes, and he's from Lubbock. That's where I'm originally from, outside of it. So what would be the other team you would put on? Kansas City? That's the only other person. I mean, I don't want to see Tampa Bay or New England or the Lions. They suck. The Browns,
Nick,
they suck.
Nick, you don't want to see the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are one of the best teams in football with Tom Brady and one of the most explosive offenses?
No, if you're going to put them against Kansas City, yeah. Are you going to put him against another quarterback like that? But if you're going to put him against who? Teddy Bridgewater or Matt Ryan? If
that
would have been Tony Romo in the Super Bowl, they would have hung him over here in Dallas. How do you lose a 25-point lead?
Nick,
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
So you're telling me that you'd rather watch Andy Dalton instead of Tom Brady on Thanksgiving?
Well, I mean, we weren't gonna have Andy Dalton. We didn't think he was going to play. I didn't think Dak was going to get hurt, you know. You take that variable away, then it would have been a different story, you know. I actually really thought we were going to go like 10-6 instead of hoping to go 9-7, you know.
Yeah, you guys are not going 9-7.
Yeah.
No,
you know what I'm talking about? We got kind of the variable, you know. It would have been different, you know. I mean, say Dak would have been in it, you know, then that would have been another story, you know.
All right, Nick.
You know, but who else?
All right. Thanks, buddy. Thanks. Let's get him out of here. It's a terrible phone call. Absolutely terrible phone call.
Come on, man.
Also, any time that you reference, hey, we were really popular in the 90s. Look, that's 25 years ago now. 25 years ago. I'm supposed to be the one stuck in the past. I'm supposed to be the one fiending for the nostalgia of the 80s and 90s. You cannot sell to me, oh, man, I mean, everybody wanted us on TV in the 90s. It was the 90s. The Cowboys haven't been to an NFC championship game since Urkel was on the air. Do I need to see them every Thanksgiving? No. And I certainly don't need to see them and the Lions in separate games every Thanksgiving. No. When we come back here on the show, the Colts with a big win comeback style against the Packers yesterday. What did they prove? Next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Morning.
things are hard, your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
Here's a snap, ball's down, kick is on the way, and it is, it's through, it went in, and the Colts win it! A walk-off winner for Rodrigo Blankenship! The Colts win 34-31 in overtime!
You got to quickly reset because you feel like, oh, we let the game get away. But wait a minute, it's 31-all. You know, it's 31-all, and we're kicking off, and we got an overtime period. So our defense did a heck of a job of that. They threw a little bubble screen, then went right back and threw another one, and we forced a turnover, and we ran it three times, and our field goal pro was great. And Rod drilled another field goal. He was solid all day. So it was a full team win, that's for sure.
Colts Radio on the play-by-play. Philip Rivers after the victory by the Colts. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Whether you rent or own, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Having a home, that's hard work. Get a quote, geico.com. That's easy. Big win for the Colts. Really, really big win. Finding themselves down by 14 points against a high-powered offense like the Green Bay Packers. Figuring out a way to tie things up. Getting to overtime. Forcing that fumble from Marquez Valdes-Scantling. And then capitalizing with the field goal to win. Now, granted, Marquez Valdes-Scantling kind of tried to do too much there. Got to have better ball security, especially in overtime, deep in your own end. He's trying to make a play. Colts have to jump on it. Good play by them. A little bit of luck as well. But I thought that the Colts showed us something that might not have been obvious going into the game. And that was, if they do trail, they have an offense that can come back. You know, the Colts defense has been elite this season. Phillip Rivers has not been. The Colts ground game usually is a more methodical bunch. It's not a big play machine. It's not a passing attack that usually creates a lot of big plays. They don't have one guy that they can really go wide receiver one and just go downfield, go deep and create big plays. Yesterday, it was the big play from Michael Pittman. That was on the touchdown. T.Y. Hilton is not the T.Y. Hilton of 5 years ago. Zach Pascal's good, but again, not a guy that you're going to lean on for huge production in the air. But Phillip Rivers really spread the football around. And I thought for the Colts, it just was a good sign of resiliency that with one of the best teams in football, down 14 points, they can make the adjustments. And after the Packers had scored 28 in the first half, they scored 3 the rest of the way. So it was a good job by the Colts in adjusting. Their offense adjusted, their defense adjusted. Frank Reich and company did the best job out of the two staffs, making the adjustments and getting that win. So a lot of credit to the Colts and a good sign for the playoffs. I would also say, though, that the Packers punted a great chance away. When you lead by 2 touchdowns and offensively you're rolling in the first half, it's always very frustrating if you're a Packers fan, and it is kind of logic-defying, that there's so many of these moments in the Packers season that they just can't figure it out. It's like somebody hit the light switch and put it on off. And I talked about this ad nauseum last week. There's been a handful of performances this year by the Packers that defy logic. That second half against the Buccaneers, that loss to the Vikings, last week, lethargic against the Jaguars. You're saying, you guys are better than this. Why is this happening? And then yesterday, the second half. The first half looks like one story. The second half is completely different. And as Aaron Rodgers is going down the field, they're going down the field. They trail by 3. He's hitting big plays. He hit MVS on the big play to get them out of deep in their own end. And he's rolling. And he has a first down from the Colts' 15-yard line with 42 seconds to play. And they are just hitting plays, boom, boom, boom. If you score a touchdown there, you win. If you settle for the field goal, you play for overtime. And after one of those first downs with 42 seconds left, Rodgers comes up and he spikes the ball from the 15-yard line. And I said at that moment, I don't like that. You've got the Colts defense on their heels. You've just made up 70 yards. You're rolling. get to the line of scrimmage. You have 42 seconds to play with and run a play. You've got time. Because think about it. If you're at the 15-yard line, you're not looking for the next first down. You've got three shots into the end zone and then the field goal attempt. And by spiking it on first down, you've now kicked away one of those chances. So he had two shots of the end zone. He threw that fade out of the back of the end zone on third down, kicked himself after that, and then they kicked the field goal by Mason Crosby to tie it. You know, the Packers, they leave me confused many times over. At that point in time, Rodgers up to the line, you're rolling, throw a pass into the end zone. Get three cracks of that game-winning touchdown.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.